Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. The University of New Mexico has been engaged in a number of studies around microplastics and how widespread they are in our bodies. We'll be talking with a researcher about the risks in our beverage and food containers, but first we'll hear some earlier coverage KUNM has done on microplastics research taking place at UNM.
Researchers at the University of New Mexico recently published a study pointing towards an alarming presence of elevated levels of microplastics in human placentas. As KUNM's Taylor Velasquez reports, this could impact future public health.
Dr. Matthew Campin led the team that published the research in toxicological sciences, which included postdoctoral fellow Marcus Garcia and researchers from the Baylor College of Medicine and Oklahoma State University. Campin says these microplastics are everywhere, and after studying about 62 donated human placentas, the wide range of microplastics give them pause. Campin says right now, people are living longer and healthy babies are being born, but because these plastics are increasing exponentially, there will be a tipping point that will impact public health.
We need governments around the world to start investing in better waste management policies.
The most prevalent polymer researchers found in placental tissues was polyethylene, which is used to make plastic bags and bottles. Garcia says even if we cut out plastic use today, we would still see microplastic production accumulate, and their goal is to bring awareness.
When you drink from a fresh water bottle, you're not putting yourself at risk because of plastics coming off of that bottle, but you're putting your grandchildren at risk.
Campin continued that moving forward in the next few years, they plan to work on hundreds more of these samples to truly understand what the outcomes were for mom and baby.
Researchers at the University of New Mexico have recently published another paper pointing to microplastics' impact on our digestive systems and their ability to travel to several of our major organs. KUNM's Taylor Velasquez has more.
Microplastics are tiny particles that are finding their way into our water and food supplies, and even the air we breathe. It's estimated that humans consume 5 grams of these microplastics, the equivalent weight of a credit card, every week. Postdoctoral fellow Marcus Garcia says that just by exposing healthy mice for 4 weeks, these microplastics were able to move into the tissue of the liver, the kidney, and even the brain. Garcia adds through this recent paper, the researchers are interested in looking at what can be done from a policy angle.
Looking towards the future, is there any type of infrastructure that needs to be built or things that we can use our data to be able to tell this story of how these microplastics are affecting us as humans?
The next steps of this developing research will analyze tissue samples from various human organs to see how the accumulation of these microplastics are impacted by specific diets, demographics, and social determinants of health.
That was Taylor Velasquez. Then earlier this year, Daniel Montano reported on a paper that found microplastics are steadily increasing in our bodies over time. The research looked at brains going all the way back to 1997 from different parts of the country and found a consistent rise in levels that doubles every 10 to 15 years. Lead author Matthew Campin says they found micro and nanoplastics throughout the brain, liver, and kidneys and found 3 to 5 times higher levels of plastics in the brains of dementia patients. He stressed dementia causes the higher plastic accumulation, though not the other way around. They also found that the body does seem to be able to clear some of these plastics.
Our findings provide some reason for optimism. The observation that plastics are not higher in older individuals compared to younger individuals suggests that our bodies do clear or eliminate these micro and nanoplastics.
Brains with dementia have diminished clearance abilities and damaged blood-brain barriers, he says, which leads to the higher plastic levels. When asked for the average amount of plastic in the human brain, Campin cautioned that the number could be either under or overestimated because of current technological limitations. But he held up a plastic spoon, which is about 5 grams, and said their estimates work out to about 7 grams.
But of course, that's obliterated into, you know, billions and trillions of nanoplastic particles. The methods are still being developed and considered by other scientists around the world. And we're working hard to get to a very precise estimate, which I think within the next year, we'll have a tremendous advancement in understanding what these levels truly are.
The research suggests that nanoplastics may be transported through the body via dietary fats, like those found in meat and dairy products, though he didn't suggest any lifestyle changes just yet, saying more research is needed. Following up on this research, I spoke with Claudia Pratesi about the risk of microplastics in beverage and food containers. She's an assistant professor at the UNM College of Population Health and also directs the Masters in Public Health program. I asked her which beverage container was the worst.
To me, the worst is going to be styrofoam. Cups, plates, bowls, anything. It releases a lot of toxins, but all of them do. Things to me, styrofoam is worse. It's just worse because it just releases more. It's easier to break down. I mean, you can even see it when you look at closely at styrofoam. It's always the one I'm most concerned about. All of them are concerning, but.
Talk about coffee pods and capsules. Why are these so problematic? Because they sure have gotten popular.
This is with any plastic, not just pods. The reason that pods are more problematic is anytime you pour hot water on plastic. So first, we have to remember that 99% of plastics are made from gas and oil. So not exactly the healthiest thing for you to be drinking or eating out of. And in addition to that, they add thousands of chemicals to them to stabilize it, to mold it, to give it color, to do a lot of different things with it. And so whenever you pour something hot on it, it helps release those chemicals. So I'm sure you've heard of bisphenol. We talk about BPA, which I don't like talking about BPA anymore. I talk about bisphenols because when they talk about BPA-free, in reality, what they did was they found two chemicals that were structurally very similar to BPA. It's BPF and BPS. They're still bisphenols. They're still very toxic. And then they call it BPA free.
Oh, my. You've just rocked my world because I drink fizzy water a lot and I deliberately look for cans that are BPA free.
They're still lined with bisphenol, most likely. So this is what in the industry is called, well, there are a couple of names for it. They call regrettable substitution, because basically you're just substituting with something that's very similar. If not worse, I think BPF is actually even worse than BPA. We also call it chemical whack-a-mole, because you like knock one chemical out and they just pop out another one. And then when we talk about pods, going back to pods, you're not only pouring hot water into it, you're pouring hot water with pressure. So it's going to release more of everything that you don't want into your coffee.
And the studies, what we're talking about here, when we're talking about single-use cups, we're talking about plastic cups. What about like paper cups? They might be coated with plastic? Or
yeah, because they put a coating of plastic inside of it because, or else they disintegrate. The issue with plastic is a lot of it, we don't even realize it's there. Like there's plastic in paper towel. We don't even realize it's there, but that's the reason that you can like rinse the paper towel underwater and it doesn't just melt. There's plastic in almost everything.
I went to a store recently in town that's environmentally conscious and encourages not using single-use things. You can get bulk things. But dental floss. They had like plastic-free dental floss. I was like, my dental floss is problematic. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like for me or for the planet or both? I guess we're
both.
Both. Okay.
So this is something that I like to teach my students is we can't separate it. When we talk about any of these chemicals, we have to think about things like the planetary health principle and the One Health concept. So these concepts show us that whatever we're doing to the environment, it's going to happen to animal life, and we're part of that. So in One Health, we talk about how we're putting plastic into the environment. So plastic is now in the water, any body of water, not just the ocean, any lake, any river, any creek, anywhere, there's going to be plastic in the water. Consequently, there's going to be plastic in animals, and a lot of the animals that we consume, those animals also are filled with plastic now. And consequently, it comes back to us. So we can't separate ourselves from the environment. We're part of it, and it's coming back to us.
This is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking with Assistant Professor Claudia Pratesi at the UNM College of Population Health about the risks of microplastics in beverage and food containers. I guess you touched on this before, but are hot beverages more harmful than cold drinks in these to-go cups in terms of microplastics?
Yes. So in any plastic, if the beverage food is cold, it's less likely, not that it won't leach, but it's less likely to leach. But if it's acidic, acidic foods and beverages will make the plastic leach more. So acidic, hot, that's going to be the oily, if it's something that's got a lot of oil in it.
So butter coffee is probably really bad, or whatever the newest thing is.
Then you're, it's oily and it's hot and acid.
Yeah, you've sent me down the rabbit hole now. What about to-go containers in general?
I really advise people to swap to glass. And I always tell people, if you're concerned with the cost, because it is costly, go to thrift stores and look for stuff in thrift stores that are glass. Use ball jars. Ball jars are great. They can go and you can heat it up. You can freeze them. They're super durable. So I really recommend ball jars for storage of food. I would just stay away from plastic. If you absolutely cannot, just don't put anything hot in it. And please don't put it in the microwave. And never put plastic in the microwave.
Dr. Pratesi, do you get takeout?
No.
You don't? No. How did you survive during the pandemic?
I have embarrassed my husband a couple of times because I will go and eat out and I'll know that I'll have leftovers and I'll put a Polish ball jar out of my bag. And he's like, I can't take you anywhere. But I don't want people putting my food in styrofoam.
Wow. My favorite Thai takeout place. I guess I should take some time and eat in.
Or you can take the glass. I've done this before. I've taken glass containers. I had a restaurant that was near my house when I lived in Seattle, and I would take my ball jar there, and I would take my glass container, and I would ask them to pack it up for me there.
And I said, that lady with the ball jar is here.
There you go. I'm the lady with the ball jar.
What are some of the real or potential impacts from these kinds of microplastics we're talking about?
Microplastic research has gone through this interesting evolution where we first were like, oh, there's microplastic in the ocean. Oh, we're finding it in bodies of water. Oh, now we're finding it in the dirt. Now we're finding it in. So in everywhere we looked, we were finding it. Now we're finding it in human bodies, in our bodies everywhere. We have looked, we have found it. We suspect that there are a lot of health implications in this, but we don't know exactly for sure. We can talk about it being an endocrine disruptor because a lot of plastics mimic estrogen. We know that it can disturb your immune system, so your endocrine system, your immune system, from the study that Dr. Matt Campen did. So two interesting things that we saw is that people that had more plastic in their brain also had Alzheimer's, so there is an association. Can we say for sure? No, but it's something that we need to look into further. There's another colleague, I think it's Marcos Garcia, did one with placentas. And the more placenta there was, and the more plastic there was in the placenta, the worse the child's Apgar, the baby's Apgar score was, which also is very concerning. We can see that it is affecting us. We don't know to what extent. We know that it causes oxidative stress. I mean, there are things that we observe, but to what extent it's happening, we're still looking into it. There's a lot more than we need to see. We know that it's causing reproductive issues, and we found microplastics in testicles. We found it in sperm. We found it in breast milk. Basically anywhere you look, we're finding it.
You teach courses in environmental and occupational health. How are you incorporating these findings into your teaching so students can use them out there every day in the world?
So one thing I tell them is avoiding plastic 100% is not possible. So that's something that we talk about in class. I want them to see where it's being found, what the effects that we're seeing, and especially how to avoid it, how to stay safe. So things like not using a plastic cutting board, because it is shown that using plastic cutting boards increases the amount of plastic.
Oh, no. Oh,
tremendously.
Oh, I got to go home and clean the kitchen.
I'm not a great dinner guest because I freak people out.
There's Debbie Downer over there in the corner.
I know.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I just finished writing a paper with a group of people at the university, which should come out soon. And we do list a lot of ways to avoid microplastics in your diet, but definitely stay away from plastic cutting boards.
Got it. Okay. What else do you teach them? I'm sorry.
I teach a number of other classes, but those are I teach introduction to public health. I've taught public health theory, but environmental One Health is a class that I developed that we didn't have before in the college, but environmental health is my bread and butter.
What are your students in these kind of environmental and occupational health? What is their career track, basically?
They're going into public health.
So they might be with agencies that are going out and talking to,
yes,
like restaurants, food prep, things like that. Okay.
Hopefully. One thing that I have them do in the class is prepare posters or infographics to show people what's happening. So they're more prepared to talk to the public and explain the dangers of microplastics.
So you've touched a little on this, but what can we all do at a personal level to reduce our risk?
There are a lot of things that you can do to reduce your risk. Well, first, not work in a place that has microplastic in the air would be great, like any sort of processing plant. Seafood is going to have high levels of plastic in general.
Why? Just because they're absorbing it in the ocean?
Yep.
Okay.
Because it's in the water. It's not just in the ocean. Remember, it's in the water. So they're absorbing it. I do not eat canned food or drink from cans because I know that they're lined with plastics, especially because during transportation, it's aluminum. They're going to heat up in the sun and the plastic is going to release into the food. So another thing people should do, not drink from bottled water. Bottled water has a lot of plastic in it. A lot. I know that there's plastic in tap water, microplastics in tap water, but if you compare one and the other, tap water is going to have way less, and you can install a filter, some sort of filtration system in your tap water.
Filtration system have plastic?
Well, it's going to filter it. It filter out the microplastics. I know. You can't.
As
I said, you can't completely avoid it. But there are good filtration systems out there. But definitely do not drink from bottled water because they release a lot of plastic.
So you go for glass bottles, glass
bottle. It was banned here in the U.S. and in some countries in Europe. Microbeads from toothpaste, from facial scrubs, from other things like that, because they saw that that was getting into the water system. But it's not something that was banned everywhere in the world. So some products might still contain them. And then you're putting them on your body. So there are the Center for Environmental Law. They might show you that's good for showing HEPA filters and things like that for the house. But then we have also, there's an app that you can download that will tell you if the product has microplastic in it or not.
You're listening to University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Assistant Professor Claudia Pratesi from the UNM College of Population Health about the risks from microplastics in beverage and food containers. What can businesses that use these to-go containers do?
They can look for more sustainable, and I know it's hard because, again, plastic is really cheap, and that's why it's used so much. So when companies look for something, they always go for plastic because they're like, oh, this is so much cheaper. So let's just go with plastic. Or we've already bought this large inventory of plastic and we have to go through it. But ideally, they would stop buying plastics and they would start looking for alternatives.
What kind of alternatives are out there?
It depends on what they're doing. Glass is not everybody's favorite because it is going to weigh more. So people think about the carbon footprint of transporting glass. I wish I had a great answer for that. There are alternatives like bamboo, but some bamboo also is not of great quality and they do contain toxins in it. Some of them are a good quality, but some aren't. So it's also hard. So it really depends on what people are packaging and how they're using it.
I mean, some of the packaging I get in places says it's compostable.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Well, we don't have any laws that say that they have to be, so they can just say it.
Okay. And they could have plastic.
Yeah. So we don't have a lot of regulations around this. That's the other issue.
You anticipated my next question. What kind of policy solutions should we be considering?
So far, the only policies that we have passed that have been passed, and I'm talking worldwide, so we have a few dozen policies that have been passed. Most of them are targeting single-use plastic. But that doesn't address the issue, which is plastic itself. So while they're like saying, oh, no more straws or no more bags or no more single-use plastic in this way, plastic production is still booming and it's still continuing and it's still increasing. So the only way for us really to see any change is for there to be policies on curbing plastic production.
Imagine that's unpopular in certain quarters.
Well, you know how strong the gas and oil companies are, and they're not exactly going to shy away from something that they make a lot of money with. So unless there is a lot of pressure from the public, it is not going to move forward. We need the pressure for change. We need to advocate for this type of change. Otherwise, it won't happen.
Do you see any responses to this issue happening right now that seem hopeful or could
not
be scheduled?
Right.
Oh, God. You don't see any. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm hoping, I do hope that there, for example, now that people will hear this and will go, oh, my goodness, there's plastic everywhere and we need to do something about it. And it's in, you know, in our babies and it's in our brain and it's in our liver and it's in our kidneys. But unless we do something about it and unless we pressure, this is going to continue and they're going to continue pumping out more plastic and it's going to continue going into the environment. Do we need a change? Yes. We need a lot more education. We need a lot more awareness of what is happening. And hopefully then we can get some change happening. But if we continue with this attitude as business as usual, I don't know what's going to happen.
How do you keep doing this work, given all this reality that you're dealing with?
I tell my friends that I teach class smiling with a chipper attitude because or else my students will walk out super depressed.
It's all in the delivery.
It's all in the delivery. But I do want them to understand what's happening and I do want them to be a generation that will go out there and they will advocate for change. So they give me hope. I will say that my students do give me hope and that, yeah, I hope we can change things. And I hope we can end the, you know, chemical whack-a-mole and that we can get away from plastic use. We didn't have plastic. If you think about it, before the Second World War, no one had plastic around. There were very few things that had plastic. It was basically only for military use. And all of a sudden, it was everywhere. And it was used for everything.
Which is why Dustin Hoffman's character is advised to go into plastics.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the late 60s.
I always think about that scene.
Is there anything else you'd like to add I didn't touch on?
Look for our next paper. I have a lot more in there talking about like things you can do.
Okay.
To avoid plastic in your life and in your diet. The other thing is there are studies coming out now showing that diets rich in fruits and vegetables and grains, especially foods that are rich in probiotics, are great to help eliminate some of the toxicity from plastic. So eat the rainbow. And also Polyphenols in blue and purple foods are also great for that. Eat your veggies. Avoid highly processed foods, because the more processed the food is, the more plastic will be in it. Think about what a food processing plant looks like. You're going to have a lot of plastic surfaces everywhere, plastic bowls, plastic mixing things. So the more processed the food is, the more plastic will be in the food. So avoid plastic, not avoid plastic, but avoid highly processed foods.
One thing I forgot to ask you about, what about plastic sandwich bags and things like that?
I don't use them.
Okay. I figured you didn't.
I just try to avoid putting my food in plastic as much as possible. I know that sometimes it's unavoidable. So if it's something that you can't avoid, maybe you just want to carry some fruits in a bag and then you can rinse them before you eat them. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are silicone bags just by good quality, because there are really poor quality silicone products out there that are very toxic also. Get high quality silicone and use that to carry your food. And they're reusable and you can use them multiple times.
I imagine your students have this sense, but now I'm going to walk out and see the world very differently as I walk around and look at things.
You will. Next time you go to the supermarket,
yeah,
you see things very differently.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, Dr. Pratesi, I really appreciate you talking with me.
Well, thank you very much.
That was Assistant Professor Claudia Pratesi from the UNM College of Population Health. You can find this episode and all our episodes of University Showcase at KUNM.org. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase and for supporting KUNM.